Good evening, and welcome to A Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight, we have a wonderful guest for you, Toni Tsar-Petrinovich. Toni received her doctorate degree in metaphysics from the University of Metaphysics in Los Angeles. She is a master teacher under the Order of the Golden Cross. Born with the ability to see multidimensionally, she uses her gifts to align people with her own truth. Toni does healing, hypnotherapy, readings, DNA reawakening, chakra readings, spiritual counseling, in addition to writing articles and books. I'm sure there are many more facets, but we're going to focus on her recent book, The Call, Awakening the Angelic Human. Let's welcome Toni to the show. Hello, Toni.
Hi, Lance. This is wonderful.
Oh, good. First of all, am I getting your name right? Can I call you Toni? Or
yes,
you
that's fine.
Okay, good. I'm so delighted that one of my previous guests, Kathy Cardozano, recommended you to me for the show.
Oh, that was terrific. Kathy and I had some wonderful interactions together some years ago. We've stayed very close since then. She's delightful.
Well, you know, I've been reading your book. I haven't quite finished it yet. I'm kind of savoring each. There's a lot to digest there. But it's a wonderful book, and I resonate with it, you know, 1,000%. But before we go into the angelic human, I thought maybe our listeners would like to find out more about your unusual childhood and about what it's like to see through the veil.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things I think we all are, if you want to call it guilty of, though I don't believe in guilt, is that we feel that the perceptions that we have, everybody else is having too.
Right.
And especially when we're children, we don't really realize that we're seeing the world from a very unique perspective, depending upon our programming and our conditioning, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And my very first memories as a child are not of this realm. My first memories are of the realm that I came from. And my father was killed when I was five, which left me sort of alone, in as much as I was named after him, I look like him, I was supposed to be a boy, I was going to be the first son, et cetera. And my mother had a feeling like I was him, still in form, and so we didn't get along really well ever since I was very, very young. So this left me alone, and though that sounds like somebody could say, oh, what a horrible childhood, it was perfect because that gave me a chance to really spend more time in the quote-unquote etheric because I was more comfortable there.
Right.
And as I continued to grow up and realize that I was going to have to ground myself into this planet, I was constantly looking for others who would be able to confirm or affirm what I was experiencing or seeing. And it wasn't until I found the Holy Order of Mans in the 70s in San Francisco that I actually found anybody who said, not only are you right, and yes, all of this is real, we can teach you more and take you further.
Wow.
So that was very awesome for me, and I was there for a couple of years and then decided that I was finished and went off on my own. And since that time, I've really found that the realm of quantum physics itself, from the standpoint of the listener's viewpoint, is the place where we can foundation ourselves and really find a language to talk about the things that those of us who see, quote-unquote, through the veil are experiencing. Because it's non-local. It is not, I'm here and there's a veil over there and I'm seeing through something. We simply use words. We use languaging to try and find some verbiage for what is an experience that is happening in more than one dimension at the same time. And what most people don't realize is that it's also happening for them, except that their programming and their conditioning has blocked it out so that they don't allow themselves to really see the synchronicities. Or if somebody, for instance, has a dream that comes true, they'll say, well, that was just an accident, that was a coincidence.
Right. We justify it, and then our beliefs project what we're going to be able to digest, and it's a very limited field.
Exactly.
I'm really curious about what, can you talk a little bit about what it was like in your life before you came here, in the previous life, just before you entered? What do you remember about that?
What I remember about it more than anything, and again, I'm using words here, and as soon as the word comes into my mind, I go, well, no, it's not quite like that.
Right,
you know,
right.
It was like, if you can imagine a place where there's no judgment, and wherever, whatever you are, and however that manifests itself is quote-unquote okay.
Wow. Wow.
Because, see, we create here a good, bad, white versus black kind of dual world, and that's what the Earth is about, is learning how to work with that those principles.
Mm.
So what people are not always aware of is that what is right or true for you might not be right or true for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
someone could say, well, there's some given facts here. We know that killing people is wrong.
Right.
Okay, now that's a pretty drastic statement for me to work with, and yet I like to make a point. We don't necessarily know that killing people is wrong. We've been taught that killing people is wrong.
Right. Right.
How do we know that killing people is wrong?
I think I know what you're talking about because I did remote viewing one time in my life.
Oh, great.
And it was we were trying to locate a missing child, and I saw it all as if I was above it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this distinct vision of a boy and a girl, and that they were angels who had incarnated simply to enact that out for some reason.
Right.
And I wasn't privy to the reason, but I was shown the details of what was happening.
Exactly.
In the emotions. And that was quite surprising to think that it was possible that there are angelics who incarnate to create the balance or to evoke things that are for our highest good.
Right, and it doesn't always have to be necessary. Like somebody could say, well, it's a karmic debt, or you had to get, you know, paid back for something or pay somebody back. It doesn't even have to be those things. That, again, is very limited thinking.
Yes.
It could be because somebody needed to witness it, i.e. you.
Right.
You know, so these beings say, let's act this out because Lance is going to do remote viewing on day X, and he's going to watch it, and it's going to change everything for him.
Yes, isn't that amazing? It changes their whole view about, you know, the dualistic thinking, and you move out of duality and more into the realm of paradox.
Exactly. And it's new paradigm thinking for everybody.
Yes. What do you feel is, I've read quite a bit about the idea that we're going to be involved in a cosmic shift.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your take on that?
Well, I believe that what's happening, and part of it, you know that article that I sent you, which is going to be published on the web here very soon?
Yes, it was excellent.
Part of it has to do with that. Part of it has to do with the information, and now I'm going to just put some words out here, and if I need to explain them more, please let me know.
Okay.
Information that comes multidimensionally through our own DNA,
mm-hmm.
through what we call wormholes, and we're just using this word because we need a word.
Mm-hmm.
And most people feel like you say wormhole, and they go, oh, yeah, I know about wormholes. That's how you go from here to there in warp drive, you know, because that's
right.
Star Trek.
Right.
Wormholes are nothing more. There's a scientific premise called the Einstein-Rosen bridge,
uh-huh.
and it was created by Albert Einstein in conjunction with Nathan Rosen, where they saw space in the theory of relativity. They saw space curved, and in that curving of space, which is really in no time and no space, so it's hard to even get your mind wrapped around it, but anyway, so it's curving, and as it curves back on itself in space and time and creates a quote-unquote wormhole where something on one side can communicate with something on another side without any loss of energy through a superconductor. It just happens non-locally. It's instant. And if anybody's had flashes of what are called intuition, where they just suddenly know something, that's what I'm talking about. It's that, using that as an analogy. So using that as a foundation, I feel that because we come into the year 2011, 2012, up through 2016, what's going to happen is that our sun is going to be in alignment with the central sun, which is in alignment with the center of our galaxy, and we're coming to the end of a 255 million year cycle with a 26,000 year cycle, and it's going to go on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
All of these things are colliding into one time. Now, some people say that's going to be December 21st, 2012. Well, yes or no, okay, that's up for grabs.
Right.
But it's going to be in that general area of time.
Right.
And because all of these things we're talking about right here, all of those pieces, those planets, those galaxies, the sun, et cetera, are nothing more than electromagnetic vibrations, and that is what we are. When they come into alignment with each other with such force and such vigor, there is no way that we are not going to be affected. Now, you can say angelic, it's a miracle, it's a mystery, it's mystical, we can call it whatever we want
right.
to call it.
Right.
But if we want to get down to ground zero, something's going to happen to our electromagnetic frequency during that time.
Wow.
And we can all feel it coming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Everybody can see how things are shifting and changing. I mean, we can just see the shift and change in the recent elections.
Right.
You know, people are saying something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
in the DNA of our bodies, which is actually a salt,
huh.
and salt is, you know, sodium is a great transfer for electromagnetic frequencies.
Uh-huh.
As the DNA picks up this vibration, it changes us. It changes us. Consciously or unconsciously, it doesn't really make any difference whether you're aware of it or not. You're still going to change. The people who are consciously aware of it, of course, then can set their intention
mm-hmm.
to be a witness to their own change, which exacerbates it
mm-hmm.
and creates more of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like anything that you put your attention on.
Mm-hmm.
The more you put your attention on it, the more of it there is. If you decide you're going to buy a red car, all you see is red cars.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing.
Yeah.
If you put your attention on the fact that, yes, there's a shift coming, and I want to be consciously aware of that shift. I want to know when that shift is happening in my body. I want to feel the changes in my body,
yeah.
in my consciousness.
Yeah.
Well, then that's what you're going to see.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to belief.
That would imply that not every, well, there's so many ideas wrapped up in this,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
each person has choice about how they will experience this shift.
Right.
And is that also validated by the idea that the Earth is rising to the next levels of dimensionality?
Well, the Earth's vibration is
okay.
actually changing and shifting.
Okay.
If anybody who's listening is familiar with the Schumann resonance,
mm-hmm.
which is the 7.8 hertz per second that is supposedly the foundation of the Earth's vibration, and some scientists say, well, it's actually raised to a 10, some say 11, some say when it hits 13, everything's going to be different, and, you know, everybody has their own supposition about it. One thing we do know is that the vibration of the Earth is increasing in frequency.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
since we are in the Earth, people think we're on it, but we're really not. We're in it. It's an electromagnetic field, so
oh,
are
yeah.
we. We're in it.
Interesting.
As it raises, we raise. As
wow.
we raise, it raises, just like a hologram.
Mm-hmm.
One piece equals the whole.
Huh.
So as the Earth's vibration is rising, and, you know, we can look at it spiritually or
huh.
not. It doesn't really make any difference what overlay or what connotation we want to put on it.
Uh-huh.
It's still happening.
Right, like it or not.
It's still
Call
happening.
Call it what you will. The train is on the way.
Exactly. And you can be on it consciously. Like one of my clients once said, you know, this sounds like a lot of work to me. I think I just want to just do it all by default. And I said, well, you can, you know,
yeah.
if that's what you want to do. If you want to walk around with blinders on for the rest of your life.
Right, right.
And just be caught up in the last, you know, whip of the lamb's tail, so to speak, fine, except that you're going to miss a lot of the quality of what's coming along.
Well, that's a very good point. That's a very good
Because that's the fun part,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
It's like my Reiki students, and I teach Reiki and other energetic work, and people will say, well, do I have to be thinking about this, and do I have to intention that for the client, and do I... And I go, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
That energy works, it has a mind of its own and a knowing of its own, and all you have to do is be a straw and let it run through you, except that you're going to miss out on the experience itself if you're thinking about your grocery list.
Right, right. In other words, there are some things that we can do in our lives that will align us with those vibrations, and make it a more interesting experience. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Huh. Well, I know a lot of people, you know, are turning away from materialism and finding that it's just not, you know, it's just not it anymore. And, you know, spirituality may not be there, you know, the answer for everybody, but there are a lot of people that are realizing that, you know, turning their attention to keeping food on the table and another house and another car is just not where it's at.
No, and it doesn't feed that yearning I was talking about in that article I wrote. It doesn't feed that yearning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So no matter how many cars or houses or whatever you get or have, that isn't going to fulfill the yearning that you feel inside of yourself for something,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
even if you can't put your finger on it. And one of the things that I think that people can do, you see, you know, there's different things we can do, is to really be present. You know, people talk about being present in the now moment, and
right,
that's very
right.
PC.
Right.
Being very present in your daily life especially with other people.
Yes.
And when you do that and you realize that we're each a mirror for ourselves,
yes.
because you only see in the other person what's actually in you.
Yes.
And though that sounds like a trite saying, it's really true. You can't see something that you don't have in you. You won't even see it.
Yes, yes.
If you can be really present with that other person, ask them questions, be part of the conversation you're having with them in a way that isn't you trying to defend your point of view or make a point or be sure that you're right, and simply open yourself up at a heart level
to
commune with that other person, it creates coherency between the two of you. And that's really what that yearning is all about. It's yearning for the coherent wave, which means that the troughs and the crests of our vibration, our frequency, are the same. So, and that's called the amplitude. From the crest of a wave down to the trough of it is called the amplitude. So the amplitude from one wave to the next is all the same, and that creates a coherent frequency. That frequency is what our entire physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual bodies are looking for always. So when we can place ourselves in a state of gratitude, love, appreciation, peace, whatever you want to, name you want to put on it, and be present with someone else, we create a bridge between us and them that allows us to expand and to see the world in the oneness that it is. And that's it's an enormous exercise. It sounds very simplistic,
except
people really take the time to do that, but watch their whole world change.
You know, and it's funny, too, where I'll often talk to people who will say about someone else that they are such loving, wonderful people, and yet, you know, they're very hard on themselves, and they don't seem to make that connection that you can't see something that's not within you.
Exactly.
So.
And that's partially true from the standpoint of owning your own shadow. So that if you see something in someone that is anger, grief, pain, you know that you're seeing a reflection of something in you. That doesn't mean it's bad. It simply means that you have experienced it, you are experiencing it, whatever, and yet you have to be able to experience something to be able to see it and then to own it and say, yes, I can see that in that person. It was very interesting. I just had an interaction in that way just very recently. My partner's sister's son has a band, and he is being mentored by U2, of Bono fame. And so that's kind of in my world. And I had mentioned this to someone somewhere along the line, and they said something about they wish that Bono wasn't so egotistical. And I said, isn't that interesting that you should bring that up? Because the first time I looked at a picture of him, because he's doing all these good works out in the world and he's doing all these things.
Oh, yeah.
The first time I looked at his picture, I thought, my God, this man is a rage. He's a raging fire of anger.
Yeah, he does look that way.
And I thought, okay, so that's in me. And I know that's part of my shadow side. I mean, just look out if I get mad. And I was reading this book over at my partner's sister's house over Thanksgiving. And it was a book of interviews with you too. And that's exactly what Bono said. You don't realize that what you see in me is a cover-up for the anger and rage I feel, and it has nothing to do with justice. I am angry.
Wow.
And I thought, wow. I saw it, and I owned it, and it was there.
Wow.
And yet he says, okay, so I am, and I'm going to go and do all these other wonderful things.
Wow. That's awesome.
And he just put it right out there, and that's what I told this other person. I said, yeah, I understand that you think he's egotistical, but if you were to ask him, which this interviewer did, he said, my ego, that big ego you see, is covering up the insecurity I feel because I know how mad I am.
Wow. And not many people can come out of the denial. You know?
Right. And just say, this is where I am. And if people would allow themselves to really go to where they are inside and say, this is really what I'm experiencing, they'd find out we're all experiencing it together. And some of us get to be in the front page of the newspapers, and thank God the rest of us don't have to.
Yes, exactly. Tony, you had an awakening while painting a wall, I read.
Oh, yes, in my book.
Yes, it's a wonderful book. That was quite a moment.
It was huge because I had absolutely no intention of having an awakening while painting that wall.
Burgundy.
I had had the inside of my house painted burgundy, gold, and rose. And there was leftover burgundy paint. And I thought, you know what? I think I'm going to paint one wall in my bed. I didn't have the bedroom painted, but the rest of the house, the public areas I had painted. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm gonna paint one wall burgundy. Well, I thought painting over white with burgundy was going to be, oh, no problem, you know, dark over light, this will be easy. But it's those stippled walls, you know, that have cracks and crevices, you know, the kind of bumpy walls.
Yeah.
So that every time you start painting, then some of it gets sticks and some of it doesn't. So you keep having these white spaces. And I was painting and painting. I mean, it took me 3 coats. It was a long tour of duty. And when I got done, I was just like, oh, thank God, that's finished. And I was just walking down the hall to go and just kind of wash my hands and have some tea. And all of a sudden, I got this feeling that I recognize from when, like, I do readings for people, soul readings.
Uh-huh.
And there's a feeling that happens in my body that I'm really familiar with. And it's kind of like it's a shift of energy where I'm here, but I'm not really here. And
uh-huh.
I just know it just goes pa-pum, and I'm in this other place. And it started to happen, except that I hadn't intentionally put myself there.
Oh.
Which is something I do if I do a reading. I intentionally do that.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, oh, well, I know this means that some information is coming. I'd better sit down and find out what this is.
Uh-huh.
And that was the book.
Wow.
And it was like somebody had taken a floppy disk, or I guess now it's a CD, and stuck it in me and said, here, write this.
Wow.
And that was in September of 2002, and by December, the book was published.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it was absolutely effortless. I just sat there, and it just flowed out of me.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very lovely. It was quite an experience. And since then, I've been working with that information and doing more, you know, research, you know, just cognitive research, because so much of it had to do with our DNA and how it actually functions. And what I'm coming to realize from, especially the work that's been being done in Russia,
mm-hmm.
Russia is just going gangbusters on this, is that our DNA is actually the bridge between this world and any other worlds that we want to bridge.
Wow.
And the Russian scientists are proving it. It was scientific experiments that are repeatable, because that's what science is all about. Can you repeat it? If you can't repeat it, it's no good.
Right.
And they can repeat them, and there's one couple, Foser and Bludarf, put together a book that is written in German, which I always went, they're Russian and they wrote in German, okay, that hasn't been translated into English yet. The pieces of it have been,
uh-huh.
And so some of it's available. And what they've proven is that they can take a laser beam and actually send it through DNA, create a picture on their computer monitor, remove the DNA, and the picture stays there.
Wow.
Because the signature from the DNA is not just in this dimension.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's
spooky action at a distance.
Yeah, as Einstein called it, that spooky action at a distance. And it was interesting, because people sometimes think that Einstein didn't really get this.
Oh.
And yet he did, at such a deep level.
Yeah.
And he's the first one who really said that there is no matter, it's all energy.
Mm-hmm. And besides, he may not have told us everything he knew.
Oh, absolutely. And he also said that he didn't think through his equations, that he would get these knowings in his sleep,
uh-huh.
wake up, and say, okay, now I know this, now I have to go prove it.
Isn't that the way it should work?
Yes, it is. It is the way. And if we listen to ourselves, it's one of the things that I tell my clients, and I talk about in workshops all the time.
Uh-huh.
If you listen to your heart space, and I'm not using this euphemistically, I'm using it very physically, the space around your heart.
Right.
The heart is the strongest electromagnetic organ in our body.
Oh.
It runs the show. It's stronger than the brain.
Huh.
5,000 times more magnetic energy, 60 times more electrical energy.
Wow.
So it's really running the show all the time. That's why when people have heart transplants, all
yeah.
of a sudden they'll know everything about the other person, or they'll have desire
yeah.
for appetites of different
yeah.
foods and stuff like that. If we go to that space in our body where the heart is, and we put our attention there, and we approach what we're doing from that space, then we will know. So if you ask somebody a question and you say, well, you know, what do you think you should do about that? And they go, well, I don't know. I just stop right there and go, okay, that's not true. You do know. You're afraid to go there. You're afraid to listen to what your heart has to say,
yes.
because your mind is going, yeah, if I do that, you know what's going to happen. Remember when you did such
yep.
and such?
Yep.
We always, always know.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And if we allow ourselves to bring that information up, and it's a practice,
mm-hmm.
and go from that space, then more and more and more comes. And what I'm finding out, and through this, because I just do this research all the time, is that the information that's coming in is coming in through our DNA.
Wow. Huh.
So when people say they get hunches, their intuition, blah, 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 it's really information coming through the electromagnetic frequency that is the DNA.
Well, you know, that's in alignment with something I've been reading about how when we're angry and negative, that the DNA literally becomes tighter, it coils tighter.
Right.
When we're in a place of love, it actually unravels.
Right. That was an experiment that was done by the HeartMath Institute.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
There's three famous experiments. Greg Braden talks about them all the time.
Oh, yeah.
One was one done by Vladimir Popanin, who was a Russian scientist.
Okay.
And he took, this was quite a while ago, he took what would be called a vacuum, though we can't really create a vacuum because there's always photons no
right.
matter what you do, but
right.
as close to a vacuum as he could get. And so he's got this, just to use it, a picture, a tube, and it's got photons in it. And so then he takes, and they're all over the place, and he takes a DNA strand and he sticks it into the tube in the vacuum, and all the photons lined up with the DNA.
Wow.
And then he pulled the DNA out, and the photons stayed lined up.
Wow.
Because the information is not in the physical body. I mean, it ends up there, but the information's actually coming from a dimension that is unseen.
Wow.
Yes. So then, just to up that ante, the military decided that they were going to do an experiment, and they took some DNA out of a person, just a little piece, it's, you know, microscopic, and put it into a vial, hooked it up to EEGs and all kinds of other machinery in a room, took the person, put them on the other side of the wall, hooked them up to the same kind of machinery, and then had them look at pictures to stimulate various emotional responses.
Uh-huh.
And as they would get angry, as you were talking about, and their you know, their emotion would tighten, then the DNA would do just what you were saying. The DNA would compress.
Right.
And then if they were happy or loving or feeling comfortable, their DNA would decompress. But it was absolutely instantaneous. It wasn't like there was a lag time. It was happening exactly at the same moment.
Huh.
So then they thought, well, if we take him, you know, a mile from here, will it still happen? Yes. And they kept taking him farther and farther away, and they gave up at 50 miles.
Wow. Wow.
And then the HeartMath Institute did another experiment that you were just talking about, where they had people who were trained in emotional response.
Okay.
Hold vials of DNA that did not belong to them.
Huh.
Tied them up to machines, tied the DNA vials up to machines, showed them pictures, and whenever they felt really happy, loving, peaceful, gratitude, etc., the DNA would expand and relax.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they would tighten in anger or grief or pain or rage, the DNA would compress and tighten up. And some of it even closed itself off so much that it turned its coatings off.
Really?
Yeah.
So there might be some kind of correlation between the coatings of the switches turning on and off and the tightness or the looseness or the relaxation of the DNA?
Right. Exactly.
I've also heard that some of the crystals and indigos, and then there's the AIDS babies as well. Today happens to be World AIDS Day, by the way.
Yes.
Who have miraculously cured themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did research on the DNA, they found that there were four switches that they had turned on.
Right.
I've read a lot of channel material about our DNA is, for some reason, was at two strands, and we're reconnecting to 12. Is that something that...
And that's what I work with, is the 12-strand DNA, and I take it, I have a CD that I sell that I created a ritual around that particular premise.
Oh.
Because DNA responds to sound, and DNA is a language. If you think of a book, you know, you've got like letters, and then you've got words, and then you've got sentences.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what DNA is like. You can think of like it being like a train, and there's all these little cars.
Uh-huh.
Well, they spell things. They actually have a syntax that, and grammar that the DNA works with, and it responds to sounds, it responds to word.
Huh.
And there's experiments going on now where people are being healed by specific sounds. And in fact, there was another thing I saw at a Greg Braden conference once that was just awesome, where he showed a film clip, and it was very kind of home video type of film clip, that had just, and he had gotten permission to use it from China, where this woman had a cancerous tumor on her kidney, and they had her hooked up to some kind of a CAT scan or something. They weren't real clear about what it was, but whatever the machinery was, there was a monitor, like a computer monitor or a TV monitor, and you could see the tumor. And three men came in who were sound healers, and they sounded a sound, just like a note, for maybe 20 seconds, and we, as the audience, could watch on this monitor, watch the tumor absolutely dissolve.
Wow.
And the DNA reacts the same way to sound.
Wow.
So if we want to shift how we are feeling or thinking or expressing or whatever we're doing to create an environment for our DNA, then we need to use our voice. And a lot of people say, you know, that listening to guided meditations and whatever doesn't really assist the shift in the DNA, and I agree, because we actually need to be saying the words ourselves. So I created a CD where I take the person through this guided meditation slash ritual, and I say it really slowly, a few words at a time, and then the person listening can repeat it out loud themselves. And then you hear yourself actually awakening, I call it DNA reawakening, awakening the codons that are actually turned off in our body, because there's 64 codons and we only have 20 turned on, with two more being the stop, off and on set, like the beginning and the end. So that there's the rest of them that are just sitting there, people say, well, we don't know what they're for. And that's where all the research is being done now in Russia, is to really work with these ones that they don't know what they're for. But in this ritual, I turn them on so that people begin to be able to awaken what we call the clair powers of clairsentience and clairaudience and what have you, and be able to interact among the dimensions. And get information.
Do you actually see patients, or patients, do you see people getting results with that?
Oh, definitely. In fact, I was so honored, and I must admit, just using the term euphemistically, blown away by one of my friends that I had sent this CD to, and he is HIV positive and just having a really rough time. And I sent him the CD. This was several years ago, and he has a meditation class that he teaches, and he emailed me like, maybe 6 months after I sent him the CD, and he asked me if I would look at his soul blueprint to see what would happen if he decided to take his own life. And I said, okay, I will do that, non-judgmentally. I will do this.
Right, of course.
So I did, and I sent him the reading. I emailed it to him, and meanwhile, not knowing what was going on in his life, meanwhile, what had happened was he had decided that he was going to do it. He wasn't even going to wait for the reading. He was just going to do it, but he had to run this meditation class first. So he decided he was going to play my DNA CD at the meditation class, even though he didn't feel everybody was ready for it. He was going to do it anyway because he wasn't ever going to go back. So he went, and he played the CD, and then he emailed me the next day, and he said, I listened to that CD, even though I've listened to it over and over and over again, and this time it saved my life.
Wow.
He said, after I was finished doing it with these students, I didn't even desire to leave. And I just sat there going, oh my, I said, did you get your reading? He said, no, not yet. I mean, it's there, but I didn't read it. I was so honored and so surprised that it could change someone that fast, that much, because I know how much pain he's in. And it was a real eye-opener to me.
That's awesome.
To think that we can affect ourselves simply by saying these words that are life-confirming words, and that your consciousness goes, oh, yeah, that's right, what was I thinking?
Yes, yes, absolutely. You know, that was something I did some research for myself in relation to that subject, and discovered that it's really crucial that we affirm to ourselves that we're life-affirming, because each time the cell divides, it creates a stronger stronger force field. So, and when, you know, and we all have our moments of depression and despair and difficulty, but, you know, it's just about knowing that you'll get through it.
Right, absolutely.
Tell us what an angelic human is.
Well, an angelic human is all of us.
I'm glad you said that.
The word angel actually means messenger.
Okay.
So each of us has come to this planet with a message, and we can decide whether or not we're going to express that message, because, as I like to say kind of facetiously, it's as though we've created this play in the story that we're going to do when we get here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting up there with our script in our hand, and we're looking at, you know, whoever, our guides or whatever picture we want to paint here, saying, oh, yeah, I can do this, no problem, you know, yep, yeah, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do whatever. And then we jump into the birth canal, and somebody whips the script out of our hands, and we go, wait a minute. Well, if I don't have the script, how do I know what to do? And they say, use your cue card. It's your heart. And then here you are. And we go into that amnesia state of, what was I supposed to do?
Yeah.
So as we begin to realize at a heart level, at a soul level, who we are, and what we've come to express here, then we have the decision to make whether we're going to do it or not. And usually what colors that is the conditioning of the way we were raised, mm-hmm. the religion we're raised in, what country we're in, what schools we went to, et cetera, et cetera. And we decide whether it's safe to do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the book, and this is the information I got walking down the hall after the famous paint job, in the book, it gave me a call. And it's the calling of that message up into the body so that you begin to feel it, again, through the DNA, and you begin to make a decision whether you're going to put yourself, quote-unquote, on the line to bring your message.
Yeah.
Some people are ready to do it, and some people aren't.
Yeah. You know, some speak about star beings and angelics who have incarnated as the Wanderers. And
mm-hmm.
there are different figures, 60 million and so on and so forth, 70 million, who came here to awaken humanity yet have fallen asleep themselves.
Uh-huh.
Could some of those be the indigos and crystals? And
oh, sure. Oh, yes, definitely. And if we take away the, and I'm not pointing this at you, I'm just saying it for all of us. If we take away the need to name.
Right, right.
You know, to say, well, this person's an indigo, and this is a crystal, and this is a this, and this is a, and the children of Oz, and, you know, just all these names, you know.
Right, right.
And we just say the new beings who are here. Then we can realize that those new beings are affecting us in such a way that we can call ourselves new beings, too.
Yes.
Because the vibration, again, talking about the quantum hologram that we exist in, the vibration that they are bringing to this planet is affecting all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, well, it's everybody born after 1982, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. And if whatever theories are out there are fine, except that the more we try to delineate it, confine it, and compress it, the less honor we're giving to it.
Right, right.
Because all of us have access to that information.
Yes, yes. And we're all becoming that.
Yes, exactly.
And beyond.
Oh, we're just barely touching, just scratching the surface. When we realize that we've been on this planet, humankind, in some form, for millions and millions of years, and only 500 years ago, we believed the Earth was flat.
Wow. I know.
You know, what do we not know now?
I mean,
there's so much that we don't know.
Oh, yes. It's amazing, isn't it?
And for people to say, well, this is the way it is. Oh, yeah, right, until tomorrow.
Exactly. Well, scientists can't even decide how many planets we have.
That's true.
Or if the Earth is hollow or not.
Right, exactly. And then when we start thinking about, and quantum physics being my passion, we start thinking about non-locality, which is actually the basis of quantum physics, which means that nothing is separate. When we're talking about non-local, we're meaning that there's no space and there's no time. Nothing has any separation. That this is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And within that, if we look at, like, for instance, somebody will say, well, I do energy work, and sometimes my clients will come to me, and they've already started doing the work before they get here, right? Because there really is no time.
Right.
So as soon as they make that call, as soon as they even think, I'm going to call so-and-so and go and do this energy work with this person, it's done.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I love quantum physics.
The rest is window dressing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, What the Bleep Do We Know came out, I think it's, you know, made it accessible for so many of us.
Yes.
You know, because there are difficult
concepts.
Yes.
That word.
Grasp. You know, and it implies, you know, with non-locality that there's instant communication from one end of the galaxy and one galaxy to the next. I mean, there's no time difference.
There's nothing. And yet if we look at things like the computer, now if we really sit here and break it down, I'm sitting here touching these plastic keys that have letters on them that's putting electromagnetic frequency, supposedly that are ones and zeros, which is something, again, that we've made up, that is going through a wire, and at the other end a person can understand that I touched those keys. Because it's coming out as words.
Yeah.
I mean, none of it even makes any sense.
Yeah. Interesting.
So if you look at it, what we're doing from the standpoint of, well, then why couldn't things be non-local?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got wireless in this house, so my partner can be here sitting on the couch as he is right now, surfing, and I can go into my office and I can send him a message and instantaneously get it through a communication device that's sitting on a shelf with no wires.
Hmm.
All of it is, it's like this concept of we want it to feel like the table, we want it to feel like a chair, and yet we're using things every single day that have no substance to them.
Yes, that always amazes me that, you know, we should be able to walk through walls if we really understood the physics of it, because there's nothing there.
Well, we can. We just believe we can't.
Right.
And that's the whole thing.
Well, I'm working on it.
Yes, this is our practice, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people claim that they can levitate and do things like that. So, you know, those are minor little things, too.
Well, one of my friends, child, who's a new child, he's just absolutely wonderful, very seriously asked his mother one day, Mom, when are we going to start the levitation part?
Oh, wow.
And she hadn't ever talked to him about anything like that.
Wow.
Ever.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah. So they come in, they already know. So the things that a lot of us are learning, they already know it. And that's why the school systems aren't working for them.
Yeah.
And that's why they have so much anger.
Well, I don't blame them.
Because they sit there and, you know, you're teaching me what? The ABCs? Come on.
They're way
ahead. They're way ahead.
Yeah.
Way ahead.
Yeah.
There's some very sophisticated schools back east that are working with a concept where the children come into the school itself. It's a building, but there's more than one building from the layout that I was shown in this book. And the teachers are there, and they're present, and they know their subjects, except the children choose what subjects they're going to learn and who's going to teach them, whether it be a teacher or another student.
Whoa.
And some of the students do not choose reading right away.
Mm-hmm.
They wait. And the example that was given in the book was that there was this one girl who waited until she was 12, and people were getting concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And people outside the school, friends of her parents, et cetera, were saying, aren't you going to do something about this? She's, you know, 11 years old and she can't read. And they just stayed right where they wanted her to be and them to be and said, we're not going to push her. She's choosing what she wants to learn, and when she desires to learn to read, she will.
Mm-hmm.
When she was 12, she said, it's time for me to read, and she picked up a book and simply read it.
That's funny.
Yeah, and just so it was kind of like, what's the big deal about?
Yeah.
It's just not time yet.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, you know, I think that words get in the way anyway.
Oh, they do.
You know, it's just one belief after another that's just, you know, overlapping and you know, more and more limitations on what we think we can do.
I know.
So, you know, in some ways, I think it would be good not to teach kids any language for a while, maybe just music and sound and light.
Oh, that would be so wonderful.
You know. Does each of us have an angelic entourage guiding us?
Oh, definitely. Many, many, many. And a lot of people ask me how they can get in touch with their own particular, you know, guardian angel or whatever you want to call this being.
Right.
That is their particular, you know, guidance system. And the way that I have found the easiest connection, as strange as it may sound, is to just get quiet and in a state of, you know, meditative quiet, so to speak, and then reach behind you and ask for the being to present itself behind you and keep your focus there.
Huh.
And it's working for a lot of people. It works for me, so I thought, well, if it works for me, it could work for other people. So, and it has been. Where it'll appear as a color, a light, a voice, a name, a picture, or depending upon however the person receives information, because we all receive information differently.
Uh-huh.
And then they can begin a dialogue with this being. And that came up in my book, too, where my angel Aaron, you know, was making a big joke about the fact that I had finally painted this burgundy wall, and I'm kind of, you know, wondering what the big joke is. And then I realized that the first time that I ever saw him, he appeared behind me as a burgundy light.
Oh, how interesting.
And I went, oh, yeah, why didn't I remember that? I mean, I didn't put the wall and him together, but he did.
Yes.
And it just inviting that in.
Huh.
So that whatever form it's going to take, it will take.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, people can become acquainted with the being or beings that are assisting them.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it also said that ETs and angelics are synonymous.
I don't know that
sure
I agree with that, but it could be. I mean, there could be
some ETs.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Now that you said that, that's interesting because you're familiar with Whitley Strieber.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I adore Whitley.
Okay, he's great.
Yeah.
So he wrote a book called Breakthrough.
Yes.
All right. And in his book Breakthrough, he talks about having been taken, now whether he was taken physically or not, he's not even sure, from his place back east to a place in Colorado by these quote-unquote ETs.
Mm-hmm.
Who were supposedly knocking on his roof and making all this racket. And they were going to have him assist them in holding down the mother of this child while they did some work with this child.
Uh-huh.
And he said, not on your best day. And these were friends of his, this woman and child. And he said, I won't do it. And they said, well, you don't have a choice. You're going and you will.
Oh.
So when they got there, he, quote unquote, got out of the spaceship, whether this is happening, you know, in his mind and or whether
right.
it's happening physically, it wasn't real clear, and he wasn't clear
right.
about it. And he went inside and began to do what they asked him to do, and when he looked into this room where they were working with this child, he saw these enormous kind of locust-type beings injecting this fluid in the spine of this child, and the
mm-hmm.
child screaming, and he got mad and said, I won't have any part of this, and, you know, ran away, and he was very upset.
Uh-huh.
And then after that happened and he kind of came back to this time and space, he was afraid to get a hold of this woman. And yet the next day she called him six times, but never brought this up.
Right.
And she hadn't called him in a long, long time, but she kept calling him and asking him questions about other things. Finally, in the book, he said he couldn't stand it anymore. He decided he was going to go visit her. And he didn't know if he was going to bring this up or not. But anyway, he went to visit her. And all of a sudden, he realizes that when he's sitting there talking with her and her child, that this child is like genius quality, and she hadn't been before. She's like 12. And he said, you know, are things different? And she goes, yeah, you know, just not too long ago, all of a sudden, she just started, like, reading a book a day and,
really?
You know, accelerated all of her classes. And she looks at her daughter, and she goes, you know, honey, it happened right after that night when all the angels came.
Oh, my goodness.
So the question was, in the book, was it perception? Was his perception, because he was so afraid of something that would scare him,
yes.
whereas they had no fear, and what they saw were angelic beings?
Yes, very interesting.
So when you said that, I'm just wondering how much it is people's perceptions
yes.
that are actually creating whatever it is they see or experience.
Yes. Because sometimes even in biblical times, there are images and visions and descriptions, even in the Gnostic Gospels, about, you know, beings coming from space and so on. And
right.
Often they're equated with angels. But I think, like you said, it's probably, you know, part of our belief system, which interprets the data, and we see what we are able to see.
Right. And if we're afraid, then we're going to create something that is fearful.
Yes. And speaking of that, I meet a lot of people online in the various groups who have the experience of the opposite side, the dark side of the angels, the demonic side. It's not my experience, but I don't poo-poo it because it seems very real for other people. What's your take on that? Do you feel like that might be just darkness that's working through a person's soul?
Well, first of all, this is my own belief system. So all of you listeners just know that you can take what is true for you and don't take the rest.
Yeah.
I do not believe in a negative dark side.
Okay.
And that's, if you've gotten to the part of my book where I tell the story about Lucifer.
Uh-huh.
Where Lucifer means light bearer.
Yes.
Some being, and for those who haven't read my book, some being had to take the opposite end of the spectrum of love, which is God, which
mm-hmm.
is Source, which is whatever we want to call all that is. If we, and whoever else is experiencing it in other dimensions or planets
yeah.
are going to experience duality. Some other something had to hold the energy of hate, fear, anger, etc.
Right.
And this being in my little story is Lucifer, the light bearer, because he was the only one who was strong enough and loved enough to be the epitome of evil forever, if that's what it took for everyone to recognize what duality is and the oneness to come back into the oneness. So for me, that dark, negative side doesn't exist in reality.
Mm-hmm.
What it is a different perception of the light. So if somebody says, well, I had this experience and this being came in the room and this and that happened, my response would be, okay, we only attract to ourselves those things that we're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
We can only attract to ourselves through the law of attraction that which we already are. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying to the person that they're bad. I'm simply saying you believe that this is true. You've been thinking about it. You have summoned this force. Now, why are you calling it evil or bad? Because you personally are vibrating that vibration.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally perception. When I lived in San Francisco back in the 60s, back in the flower child days.
Oh, my, you were there then, huh?
Oh, I was. I was walking down the street in the Tenderloin, if anybody's familiar with that. Tenderloin means just that.
Yes.
And I was with a friend, a girlfriend, and we're walking down the street, and there was a man who had a gun. And he was drunk, and he was throwing garbage all over the street, and he had a loaded gun, and he was going to shoot somebody.
Ooh.
He was very upset, and everybody's running, screaming, going through all this, and I just looked at my friend, and I said, well, it's either you or it's me. Who's it going to be? And she just looked at me. I said, okay, it's me. And I just dropped into that center of peace where all I could see was his pain, and that's all I could see. That's it. Nothing else. And loved him in his pain and walked straight up to him, put my hand out, and said, give me the gun.
Whoa.
He said, why? And I said, because I asked for it. And he did.
Wow.
And I took it and I took the clip out and I said, now, let's talk about what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out he had a fight with his wife who was hanging out of one of the windows in one of those, you know, high rises in San Francisco, screaming her lungs out, you get up here, dee-dee-dee-dee.
Right.
He didn't really want to kill anybody. He was upset.
Mm-hmm.
It was my perception that he was not evil, that he was not going to do any harm, that created a space where he didn't.
Yeah.
Again, we are creating our reality. Everybody else that was running up and down the street was sure he was going to shoot him,
mm-hmm.
and so they were upset, and he was the bad guy.
Right, right.
And all we need to do is to stay in that place.
Mm-hmm.
And people can call this sophomoric, they can call it Pollyanna, they can call it whatever, but the first time they try it and it works, they're going to change their mind.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because it really has to do with what we believe is true.
Mm-hmm.
So if some quote-unquote ghoul appears in the room, why not ask him in for tea? What are you doing here? Why did you come? I must have summoned you here.
Right.
Instead of saying, oh, my gosh, you're bad and you're going to hurt me, and we've self-created that which we fear the most.
Right, and what we resist persists.
Exactly. Instead of allowing it to be mm-hmm. that which it really is. It's just like this, you know, whole thing in Iraq, politics aside.
Mm-hmm.
It's two sets of people who believe that they are right about God.
Mm.
That's what it's about.
It's
you know, we can put all our colors on it we want, but that's really what they're fighting about.
Well, it's been going on for thousands of years.
Exactly. Exactly.
It seems like that's part of an old paradigm. Of,
it is.
Know, my God's better than your God.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Well, ultimately, that seems like an excuse to take other people's lands.
This is true.
I mean, you know,
right.
The God argument is one thing, but the ulterior motives are something else.
And it's power.
Power, yeah. Greed.
Right. It's all of those things.
Right.
So if we go to a place where we simply see beings acting out a story that they can't find a way to get out of, and,
right.
you know, again, leaving politics and the government aside and just how we each view it.
Right.
We realize that the only thing that will assist them in changing that is our seeing it differently.
Yes, yes.
That's what we all need to do. If everybody who spends their time waving flags or not waving flags or holding up peace symbols sat down for 5 minutes and held nothing but the essence of peace,
yes,
then we would have it.
Yes, it would be reflected back to us.
Exactly.
Yes. And so many of us are looking outside ourselves for blame and so on and so forth, when in reality all we have to do is take responsibility for our own creation.
Exactly. That's, and that's, and that goes for everything in our lives, and everything that is out, what we think is outside of our lives is really in our lives.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like the outside's on the inside and vice versa. I mean, you know, that there's whatever is outside of us is not really outside of us. It's actually inside, and I'm not even sure those terms are relative.
It's just they're words. Then
yeah.
It's trying to find a way to express something that is inexpressible.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Ho'oponopono?
I have heard of it. The healing?
Yeah, the healing that Dr. Iliakala did.
Yes, it's incredible.
And it, all he did was heal himself.
Yes.
And he healed all of those convicts who were supposedly criminally and mentally insane. And he only did it by working on himself.
That was an amazing... I forwarded that story around to all the groups I'm in. It was an amazing story. I know we're going to be starting to run out of time soon. I wanted to ask you, what do you see on the horizon in terms of Earth changes?
You mean just the planet itself?
Yes.
It's going... I don't personally see anything like a prophecy or a projection.
Right.
It's going to depend upon how the people in the Earth hold the vibration of love, peace, and appreciation. It's going to be up to us, 100%.
Yeah.
Because... You know, back in the 70s and 80s, there were all these predictions about California falling off the side of the earth and blah, 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 and falling into the water. And,
right.
all, and none of these things that have been predicted have come true.
Right.
Because our consciousness has shifted enough that they don't, quote unquote, need to,
mm-hmm.
to get our attention. So my question is, are we going to be able, as a species, to hold a space of congruity and a coherent wavelength that is coherent enough that we don't have to have something happen that makes us do it versus doing it of our own free will.
Yes, and it seems like a lot of the apocalyptic visions are basically just a desire to be saved.
Exactly.
Which is, in essence, you know, we don't want to be responsible for ourselves. You know, Daddy, Mommy, pick me up.
Somebody come and help us.
Yeah. How do people get in touch with you on your website, and tell us about your book and CDs and how people can get in contact?
Okay, my website is Sacred Spaces, that's S-A-C-R-E-D, Spaces plural, S-P-A-C-E-S, W-A, Sacred Spaces, WA, so Washington, .com.
Uh-huh.
Well, Sacred Spaces was taken. And my email address is there. It's sacred@anacortes.net, anacortes.net. That's on my website.
Uh-huh.
If anybody wants my book or my CD, when you pull up my webpage,
uh-huh.
they are on the front on the home page, and all you do is you click on the cover of the book or you click on the cover of the CD, and it takes you right into the order page.
Wonderful. Well, I've got your book, and it's a fantastic book. I recommend it to everybody.
Thank you.
And now that I've heard about your CD, I'm going to go ahead and get that, too.
Oh, wonderful. Terrific.
So, Tony, you have been just a delight to talk to. I feel like I could talk to you for hours.
Oh, isn't it fun?
It really is.
I know. It's really fun to talk with somebody of like mind. And
Yes, and, you know, just by putting ourselves out there, it's amazing, you know, what we can create together.
I know.
So
very enjoyable.
I just want to thank you immensely for the time you spent with us here, and I'd love to have you back again sometime.
Oh, that'd be terrific, Lance. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Night.